Technorama episode 628. I'm a big fan of renewable energy. Hey, welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are returning to us, thank you very much. We appreciate it. It means we must have done something right on a previous episode. But thanks anyway. If you are new, well, now you got to give us a chance to prove our worthiness. I am Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me right over there is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. I enjoy my podcasting work.
I love my job.
That's right. Hey. No, things are going pretty good, man. Just trying to stay dry and warm here.
Oh, well, you can always come out here. It's dry and warm.
I know. It's always dry and warm.
I keep offering and nobody takes me up on it, but maybe soon, later. Soon. You know, all the old people can't be wrong, buddy.
Well, you know, hey, let's see. When is it? In June, you can have the Technorama pool party.
Probably not this year. I don't think we're going to have quite enough coverage on that vaccine yet.
No, I think it'll be a small party of 2 to 4.
I'm so disappointed because that's going to be 2 years and we got this cool karaoke app we can use to have even more fun than we did when we didn't have the app and had fun doing karaoke. So, yeah, the only real road testing that app got was at Dragon Con, and man, that thing has evolved so much in the past year and a half. It's crazy. Oh,
speaking of which, somebody asked me at work. I didn't see the video, but we had a kind of a conference thing at work.
Yes.
And somebody said, hey, that Jeopardy app, was that Chuck's Jeopardy app?
Usually the one they use for the team. If it's the training department, yes. If it was ServiceNow Colors, it was mine. That's all you got to know.
During our kickoff thing. I didn't see the video.
Oh, I didn't see it because I was an hour late to that. I was delivering another presentation, so I didn't see that. It may have been, but usually if it's related to the marketing team or the P4 team, no, they just go and use, they don't, for whatever reason. They like to use my scenarios, but they don't like to use my apps.
Well, somebody saw it because they asked me if it was yours. I said,
could have been.
If it was Jeopardy and it was written in our work platform, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I don't know anybody. Yeah. Nobody else is dumb enough to do that. Why would you want to waste your time writing that? No one's going to use it, right?
No kidding. What an idiot. Sorry.
Art of the possible, people. Art of the possible. All right, let's get to our feedback section. We've got some feedback from you. We asked you a question yesterday.
I just closed the mouth. There we go. Go ahead.
I'll bring my questions up.
Ladders every day.
Ladders?
Ladders every day. Dun, dun, dun. Got some interesting comments here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
You know what I want, Facebook? I want to click on this number 6 and find out who those 6 viewers are right now. Don't make me guess. This is the crappiest viewer interface from a presenter standpoint that I can see. But
I know. You know what? There's probably a whole secret interface and we don't.
There probably is. Kind of like Studio gives you YouTube stuff. But anyway, let's continue on. I mean, YouTube gives you Studio, not Studio gives you YouTube. We asked you a question last week. We said, what job sounds dull and boring, but is actually awesome and quite fun? And we're going to read some of the highlights we got. Craig, you got the Technorama answers up there?
Yeah, our buddy Steve London says developer. I disagree with that. I'm just kidding.
So it's hysterically fun.
He says a developer. Try to pick up chicks with the pickup line. I'm a software developer. I work in IT.
You know what? That's actually a really good line these days. It used to be terrible 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. But you know, technical people kind of run the world right now.
Yeah. And there's only two of them here, so I'll read the second one. John Kratzer says, building servers, which can be fun.
It can be challenging. It can be fun. It can be frustrating.
And you know what I'm thinking at the top of my head?
You'll laugh. You'll cry. You'll build a server.
You'll laugh. You'll cry. Become part of you. It's Windows virtual servers. Those are kind of interesting to make.
All right. Eric Miller just says return null. That job sounds. I guess that's his scheduled job that runs every night. He runs that job every night. What's it do? It just returns null. Doesn't do anything.
That's his personal cron job.
Mike Stockman says, unloading plant trucks by hand. You get to enjoy the beauty of each plant. All right. You might know something about that, Craig, if you ever helped out Kim at the florist shop.
No, I did not. Not like that.
My sister says, diocesan safe environment coordinator. She works for the Catholic Diocese in Michigan. She says, I love my boring sounding job.
Safe environment coordinator.
Mike Wills also says programmer. My cousin John says math professor. He must love his job because I don't, you know, everybody's got their thing, I guess. Let's see. Pat Kulibeck says, since the tech industry has largely hijacked the term architect, no, seriously, mm-hmm. The last time I looked, I had to disregard 80 to 85% of the postings. Being an actual architect is a blast. Now, Scott Tyler's an architect also.
Yes, he is. Yeah. And he seems to enjoy it.
Yep. Weber Baker says, mouse driver. Like, that's a piece of software. That's not a job.
Unless, wait a minute. It might be a job.
It's like a... Yeah,
that's right. Hey, well, the Pied Piper got the rats out of the town, so somebody's got to drive the mice out too.
Speaking of Pied Piper, remind me when we get to pass the remote. The name of it's anyway. I'll get there. Just
okay.
Remind me of childhood stories when I get there. My sister Suzette says sewing with a Singer sewing machine. Well, there's a tongue twister. Creating simple dresses. I feel like I am in a different time. That would be cool. I really wish I had some, what do they call that? Textile skills to make the, I would be making cosplay stuff left and right. Amy, I applaud you for your, cosplay making skills because I have to go buy everything.
You know, I do know somebody on Facebook that used to make, I guess she still does, was making, 50s style dresses from old patterns, and you could just buy them, I guess, off eBay or wherever, you know, you could buy the pattern.
What were the name of the pattern catalogs? Not Warwick. Something like that. Somebody's got to know that my sisters used to get those patterns all the time. Donut taster. Yeah, nice. John Miller Jr. That doesn't sound like a boring job to me. I want to go the other direction and say, what job sounds exciting and is really boring? You know what one of those is? Video game tester. Sounds fun, doesn't it? No, it's not.
Vegas card pick-upper.
You might want to check that title. I don't think that's what it's really called. Simplicity was what... Yeah, thank you, Clinton. Simplicity was one of the pattern catalog makers for making dress patterns. Maybe when I retire. All I got to do is get a sewing machine and buy some patterns, right?
How about a job like at ILM where you're the guy that touches up all the frames to move pieces of trash? Monotonous.
One more for you. Mickey just says, my job.
Oh, okay.
Sounds boring. Really exciting. Good for you, Mickey. All right. That takes us to the end of that one. Short one tonight, but we appreciate it nonetheless. We'll give you another question at the end of the show. And let's take you out of here. We didn't get any email or voicemail, so we're going to go on.
Wow.
I'll probably remember
I
that
remember saying anything.
Other wow. catalog. Let's go on with the history then. Yeehaw! This is the history segment.
All right.
February 3rd, 2021. You know what that means? It's the 34th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 331 days remaining in 2021. It was on this date in 1690 that the colony of Massachusetts issued the first paper money in the Americas. Remember that, Clinton? You still have some?
He designed it. So that same date in 1918, the Twin Peaks Tunnel in San Francisco, California, began service as the longest streetcar tunnel in the world at 11,920 feet. That's 3,633 meters for all you meter-challenged people.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. It was also on this date in 1959 that the music died. That's right. Rock and roll legends Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.P. Richardson, a.k.a. the Big Bopper, were killed in a plane crash near Clear Lake, Iowa.
You know, Kim and I were just talking about that another night.
Okay, name one person who should have been on that plane but gave his seat up.
Oh, I know.
Let me give you a hint. Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Waylon Jennings.
Oh, Waylon Jennings. Oh, of course.
You lose. Go on. Move on.
Oh, Luke.
No, not Boss Hogg.
All right. On February 3rd, 1966, the Soviet Union's Luna 9 became the first spacecraft to make a soft landing on the moon and the first spacecraft to take pictures of the surface of the moon.
From the surface of the moon.
Oh, from.
So when they were leaving their stop and they had a plane, Richie Valens said to Waylon Jennings, this is according to Wikipedia, he said, "I hope your bus freezes." And Waylon Jennings says, "I hope your plane crashes."
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. So be careful what you say, people. You may have to live with it for the rest of your life.
No kidding.
All right. Also today, 1984, space shuttle mission STS-41B was launched using the Space Shuttle Challenger. Ooh, speaking of crashes.
And also on February 3rd, 1994, space shuttle mission STS-60 was launched, carrying Sergei Kerkalev, the first Russian cosmonaut to fly aboard the shuttle.
Very cool. And the space shuttle saga continues because on this date in 1995, astronaut Eileen Collins became the first woman to pilot the space shuttle as mission STS-63 gets underway from Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Wow, they did a lot of stuff on February 3rd.
A lot of space stuff.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to English scientist Gideon Mantell, born on this date in 1790.
And Felix Mendelssohn.
Midsummer Night's Dream?
Oh, Mendelssohn. Okay, whatever. The German pianist, composer, and conductor was born 212 years ago today.
You just like saying pianist.
You just like pointing it out.
Hugo Junkers, the German engineer who designed the Junkers J1. Or would it be the Yaw 1? I don't know. I was born on this date in that same date in 1859.
An American painter and illustrator, one of my favorites, Norman Rockwell, was born on this date in 1894.
Somebody's painting me.
Not
the right Rockwell. Darn it.
No.
Pretty Boy Floyd. Yes, the American gangster, the original gangsta, was born on that same date in 1904.
And also born on that same date in 1950, American actress Morgan Fairchild.
Yeah, Morgan Fairchild, that's the ticket, yeah.
I hadn't really heard anything about her.
Remember that skit with the habitual liar?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I'm married to Morgan Fairchild. Yeah, that's the ticket. American mathematician, geneticist, and academic Eric Lander is 64 today.
And also turning 51 is English actor, producer, and screenwriter Warwick Davis.
Warwick. No, it's Warwick. You go Warwick. Listen to the way he says his own name. It's almost like the second W is. No, he doesn't.
Like it because he's English.
Yeah, right. Say the name the way the person would say their own name. That's like saying your name is Craig Steppy.
I get that all the time.
Yeah, and they're wrong, aren't they?
Yeah, whatever.
Well, also someone who's wrong, born today in 1984, being a whole 36 years old or 37 years old today. American fraudster. Oh, that's a terrible thing to stick to your title. American fraudster and founder of Theranos.
Oh, Theranos. I loved him in the Avengers.
Yes, the big purple. Elizabeth Holmes. So, listener birthdays today include February 3rd, Ewan Campbell McGregor from Scotland, UK. He was in one of those movies, right? Ewan McGregor? Steve London on the 4th. Happy birthday, Steve. Chad W. Smith from Chattanooga is on the 7th, along with Brian the Big BS in PA. There's a lot of letters in here that I can't pronounce. The 8th is Jan Scott from Yorkshire, UK, and podcast Mike Wills from Minnesota on the 9th. Happy birthday to all of you. How are we doing on timing? Hey, not too bad. We got about 30 seconds left. That's the way it was on this day in history for February 3rd. 2021. And if you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, I'm going to put something right up on the screen that says how to do it. You go to chuckchat.com/wiki. Put your name on the birthday calendar. We will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. If it's your birthday and we didn't call you out, well, happy birthday anyway. You get a free one. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Two free ones. That takes us to the end. Play it, band.
Play us out.
That works for me. All right. Let's see. High school students build a Back to the Future. That deserves some good news, everyone.
Yes. Good news, everyone.
That works for me, too. Let's read on with the first story. High school students build a Back to the Future monument. Okay. Well, we already have statues for many other things. So students at the Tanabe Technical High School in Wakayama, Japan, have spent over 4 years making a DeLorean replica out of 2 millimeter thick aluminium. The monument is located in front of the school, and 4 times a day during the week, it slowly spins around as Back to the Future theme song plays. Da, 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 da.
It is pretty cool.
With the okay given from Hollywood. Very nice. They got blessings for this. Work on the project began in 2016 on the 500 kilogram replica, Sankey reports. And over the years, around 500 students have worked on the project. Holy
wow.
Tomato.
Are you kidding me?
Well, think about this. 4 years. That's how long it takes to go through high school. You could have.
But 500 people?
Yeah. Well, our high school was about.
Worked on it? Wow. Close to 400. I mean, no, they've worked on it. What?
Yeah.
If they all just did one little thing, they could have done it in a week.
Takes a lot of people to rake the gravel around the base of the statue. The school pointed out that the project was a good, tangible way for students to show their parents what they've been doing and be proud of their work. Yes.
This is what you've been doing with your extra time, kid? Oh, my God. What a failure.
No, but think about it, man. They could come back 30 years later. Their kids will be going to school and go, my dad helped build that. Or my grandpa helped build that.
Really cool. I'm only a kid. No, this is fantastic. I think it's awesome. And especially, I mean, why would they not give the kids permission to put this up? I mean, come on.
Craig, all I got to tell you, say is Axanar.
Axanar.
Copyright goes a long way and branding goes a long way to protecting things and people saying no.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, this is the kids did it and it only keeps Back to the Future in everybody's mind. So what's the harm?
We've seen other statues.
There can't be any more money made from Back to the Future. They've made it all. So what's the harm?
Craig, Hollywood and reboots. That's all I got to say. Somebody is going to reboot Back to the Future at some point.
No, won't happen.
Oh, you young, naive person, you.
Nope, it won't happen.
Take us into the next story then.
All right. So let's see. Oh, this is interesting. So NASA's Perseverance Mars rover landing will be a must-see TV. And guess what? You'll be able to, which is really awesome. I wish they've done this before in the past. So NASA just weeks away from landing a shiny robot on the surface of Mars, and for the first time will be able to see and hear what it's like to touch down on another world.
Didn't we already cover a story that this robot was going to have microphones on it, and we talked about the atmosphere being thinner and things
being
quieter?
Not just the microphones. This is a little bit more detail.
All right.
So Perseverance is due to land on Jezero Crater on February 18th. Becoming the first artificial object to land on the surface since the Mars InSight lander in 2018 and the first rover since Curiosity touched down in 2012.
They make it sound like it's been centuries since this happened.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, six, eight, yeah, I know. Make it sound, they do.
Not,
make it sound
it's
like
not
that.
Like we're launching and landing things every 2 weeks and go, oh my gosh, it's been 3 years. Anyway, go on.
Well, we talked about the microphones before, but this showed how many cameras they've got on it. So you will be able to see it landing. And if you'll scroll down a little bit, I think you may have the image up. I can't really tell. There's a camera in the back shell of it. Okay. The descent stage, which is much like the before when we talked to, my mind's blank. We had the interview and the guy was talking about the right kind of crazy and Adam Stelzner. Thank you. With the, you know, the hover rocket that holds the, that lowers the rover down.
The sky crane.
And then it flies off. It's got cameras on it looking down. And so the back show has a camera looking up. The descent stage has a camera looking down. The rover has cameras looking up and down and a microphone.
Okay.
So I just thought it'd be interesting. You'll be able to see this literally as it happens, or, you know,
yeah,
the different video points of view.
And when is this all happening? So I can
February 18th.
Okay. A couple of weeks, people.
Yeah. So we should, keep, I assume we'd see the video shortly thereafter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, February 18th.
Well, I want to watch it live. That's the way the internet goes these days. Oh, by the way, John Miller Jr. agrees with me. It will happen.
Back to the future?
There will be a reboot.
No. Bob Zemeckis and Bob Gale have both said that there's a clause that they can't, you know, without their consent, they can't reboot anything. And they both said they're not doing that while they're alive. Maybe when they're
okay,
dead.
Okay, so maybe when they're dead, or they give them a boatload of cash because money changes. They said without their consent. Here, yeah, here's $50 bazillion. Oh, I consent. I consent wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I doubt they'll do it. I think this is one of the, this is one of those movies. I mean, you've had cartoons and there's been comics and stuff too to go along with it. But the thing is, even a video game was supposed to be canon to this. But they said they're, this is one of those series, I think, three movies, done. Don't do like Star Wars and start tacking on. We had 9 episodes in mind when we first conceived it, blah, 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 blah.
All right. Did you know that the Earth had a second moon?
I was not aware of that.
Well,
I think I heard through Reddit or through a little bird. I don't know. Tell me about it.
Well, we're going to lose our second moon before most people even knew we had one. Earth's second moon will take a close approach to the planet next week before drifting off into space, never to be seen again.
It's not the Tesla, is it? With spaceman?
What second moon, you ask? I'm glad you asked. Well, astronomers call it 2020 SO. A small object. Maybe that's what SO means. Or it's named after the old gas stations. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right.
A small object that dropped into Earth's orbit about halfway between our planet and the moon in September 2020. Look, 2020 actually gave us something rather than took something away. Hmm. Temporary satellites like these are known as mini moons. It's a mini moon. Though calling it a moon is a bit deceptive in this case, because in December 2020, NASA researchers learned that the object isn't a space rock at all, but rather the remains of a 1960s rocket booster. They're easy to confuse. Yeah. It was involved with the American Surveyor moon missions.
Oh.
The non-moon mini moon made its closest non-moon mini moon, non-moon mini moon, non-moon mini moon, moon. Anyway, made its closest approach to the Earth on December 1st, the day before NASA identified it as the long-lost booster. But it comes back for one more victory lap, according to EarthSky.org. Mini Moon 2020 SO will make a final close approach to the Earth on Tuesday, February 2nd, at roughly 140,000 miles. For you people that don't do miles, that's 220,000 kilometers from Earth, or about 58% of the way between Earth and the moon. So, get ready for that. We're about to lose our rocket booster mini moon, non-moon mini moon.
Yeah, see, I thought you were going to say it was the Tesla, you know, with the spaceman.
Get flung off into space.
Whee! Well, it's in Mars. Last time I looked, it was around Mars, I think.
Wait, how long has that been up there? Hasn't it been a couple of years now?
Yeah, I guess it was 2018.
Okay. And didn't they say we'd be able to possibly see it again in 2020, in a couple of years? We should be coming up on another flyby.
Yeah.
I put that in my back pocket and remember, it'll be a couple years before.
Launch date, February 2018.
Aha. Not a bad memory for an old guy.
Where is Elon Musk's Tesla Roadster.
In his driveway, dumbass.
No, it was his personal car they sent up to space. Here you go. Where is the roadster.com? Let's see.
All right, Roadster
is actually near us, it looks like.
See?
Told you. I think we might be a little far away to see. If you see it, it'd be like a little dot. I mean, you wouldn't be able to tell.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back while Craig checks his facts again.
I'm checking facts.
Okay. Be right back.
Bob Nerdly is a real Geico insurance customer, not an actor. To help him with his message, we've hired professional voice actor John Bell.
I was having problems downloading my podcast.
In a world where critical information has to get through.
I went to chuckchat.com and clicked on Technorama and gave it a listen. Tech, science, sci-fi interviews, it was great.
A new wind was beginning to blow.
Chuck and Craig are funny, informative. I don't know what I would have done without them.
In the fight for justice, two men stood up to help those in need.
Geico Insurance, only available by listening to Technorama at chuckchat.com.
Feed your inner geek. My throat is starting to hurt.
Hey, this is Kate Vernon, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
The beginning of Kate Vernon's little ID sounded like we were starting a Hawaiian luau.
Yeah, sitting there, I'm in the background with the fire.
Yeah. Let's make for great time-lapse photos, by the way. All right, that means it's time for the Hacks and Strange Stories. That seemed like too many beeps for me, but we'll move on. I think this one's yours. Why don't you take this?
Sure. So I thought you'd like, everybody likes a good hack, right? So this developer modifies his fourth gen iPod with built-in Wi-Fi and Spotify.
Did the fourth gen have a light-up screen? I thought it was still LCD at that point. This thing is okay.
Wasn't it a color screen?
I know the fifth gen was. That's the thinner one that
I got. It's like an LCD. I don't know. Maybe he hacked that too. Well, let's read on. Let's find out. So iPod Touch is officially the only iPod Apple ever released with a Wi-Fi connection.
True.
But what if older iPods had an internet connection and access to streaming services? That's exactly what developer Guy DuPont was able to do with his fourth gen iPod. Let me increase that font a little bit. His fourth gen iPod, which was modified with built-in Wi-Fi and a Spotify app.
Because I'm sure Apple has every intention of letting you listen to Spotify.
Yeah, they're just, yeah. That's
they would right. only allow you to listen to Apple Music on their device.
I know, right? So, in fact, there's not much of an original iPod left in his modified device. Uh-huh. That's because the developer replaced almost all the internal components to achieve this, keeping the original case with the click wheel. Even so, the final result is quite interesting and fun to see. The S-Pot, is what DuPont calls it, has Wi-Fi, Bluetooth connectivity, plus a color screen and an internal 1,000 milliamp battery. He used a $10 Raspberry Pi Zero W, hence the wireless, and a micro USB connector to create and install a version of Spotify using Spotify's official APIs that resemble the classic iPod interface. DuPont demonstrated the modified iPod running Spotify and shared the audio with an external speaker via Bluetooth connection and video on his channel. And there's a video embedded in the article here, which you can watch below. So the project cost him less than $100 in total, but the developer has no intention of selling the modified iPods with Spotify. Instead, he shares more details about how he built the S-Pot. Sounds like you got to be in one of those lucky states where it's legal.
Or Spot.
S-Pot.
Spot.
Well, the P's capitalized. That's why I was saying S-pot.
Is the P silent, like in pterodactyl?
So it's a sot. Anyway, he has more details about the S-pot.
Oops, I forgot to put our faces. Thanks, John. I forgot to put our faces back on the screen.
Oh, you can find it on Hackaday.
The Technorama thing was still going while we're reading that story. That's what happens when I lose my video engineer. You might have staring. Right.
I know.
The audio people won't notice a thing on Wednesday.
Right. And you can also get the source code for his stuff.
Well, that's nice. Now I got to do is go find an old iPod to hack.
I thought you had one. Did you not?
I had the 10 gig first gen with the mechanical click wheel. And then I had a,
which was very satisfying. I thought it felt good.
Oh, there. I did too. Until it kind of lost its friction. You could sit there and go, wee, and spin the thing around. Yeah, it was real fun. The menus go. I did have a fifth gen. That was the video one that they came out with. It's a little thinner. Mm-hmm. But both of those went to the recycling bucket just before we moved out here. They did not make the journey. Got enough.
I think I may have had this particular one, this fourth gen iPod.
Speaking of things that made the journey from Appleton to Phoenix, I needed a circular saw today. I mean, I went and bought a small tooth blade for my circular saw, and I came home, and I'm trying to unlock the nut, you know, so I can change the blade.
Yeah,
but you need to lock the rotor. I mean, you got to push a button or something. Otherwise, you're just going to spin that thing around in circles. Could not find it. I can't find a button. I can't find a switch. I can't find anything to lock the rotor on this thing. I go online looking for PDFs. I say, I've got a Skill Saw 5400. Mm-hmm. And it shows me this model that isn't my model. I mean, the image clearly isn't the right model because it's got a attachment for a dust collection bag. And I'm like, this isn't my saw. It says, oh, the button is right here in a poorly drawn inset. Yeah. Like, what? Where is that?
Yeah.
I have no basis of reference for my saw to this diagram. And by the way, it's not the right diagram. I'm looking and looking. I just cannot find it. I am turning this. I'm ready to take my skill saw apart, but don't want to. And Donna comes out in the garage. I say, you know, I can't find my manual. I mean, I can't find the lock button for this thing. She says, did you check the manual? I said, I'm looking online, but it's not the right manual. She says, I wonder if it's in the cupboard. I said, ooh, this thing is like 20, 25 years old. I don't think I still have the manual. She goes, here it is. And you know what? It was the same as the PDF I was looking at. It was the wrong manual. But it covers the 5400, 56, 55, and 5700. They have one manual for all of these models, and none of them covers this. So I look in the printed manual that had some interesting stains on it. And it says, here is where your lock button is. Model 5700 only. Well, genius here has a 5400. You know what I did? I took a screwdriver and jammed it into the teeth, and then I was able to get it off.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably what I would do. Or
the challenge is putting the new one on and tightening it because it's got to go in the other direction, and the teeth don't go that way. And now you're using a small tooth blade.
Just hold on to it.
I did. I grabbed a vice grips and go, I hope I don't bend the blade because here we go.
Actually, vice grips, you should have been able to clamp it on there and it maybe got it to stay.
You know what else I found when we were looking for the manual? A small tooth blade that I just bought. I found an older one.
I was going to say a fourth gen iPod.
Spent a whopping $7 on something I didn't need, but hey, that one's nice and sharp. And the one I was using was kind of not. So maybe it was a better thing that I got it, but I got everything cut. I got a blade. Now, just to make myself really upset next time, I loosened the bolt so I can change it out in case I need to put the big tooth. But you know what's going to happen? I'm going to go out there and go, wee, and the thing's stuck. No.
It's going to be like your old iPod click wheel. Yeah.
I'm going to hit that board and the thing is going to stop. Bing. The blade will stop, but the motor's going to keep going. So, lots of fun at the household today doing some carpentry in the studio.
That's funny.
Where were we? Oh, shout out to the chat room. Yes, let's get on with that.
All right. I see John Miller Jr., yep. Mike Robeson,
Amy Bowen, Clinton Alvord.
Clinton Alvord.
Hey, if anybody else is out there, Dhruv Gupta is on the YouTube chat. So thank you very much. And if you're out there, I see a couple more people that are there with it. They're not saying anything, but we give you a shout out as well. Lurkers. One just laughed. They go, oh my gosh, they're naming names. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Lurkers.
That's all right. We like lurkers on this show.
Yeah. So
thank you. If you want to join us, if you're around on Sunday nights, like many of us are, because we're not traveling anywhere, head on over to chuckchat.com/technorama or look us up at Technorama Podcast. Let me say that slower. I know that went a little fast. Technorama Podcast. Put that in your search engine. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Facebook because that's where we broadcast live. I get a little excited and go fast sometimes. And I can't even, you can't understand the words. Pity for the people who are listening to our podcast on double speed. Sorry. Let's get into the Remember When. Woo! We got Remember When stuff. Yeah. I love reading 1980s computer magazines. Is this one mine? Yeah, because you did the fourth gen iPod. So here we go. From Wired Magazine. Imagine walking into a greeting card store to get a bespoke bit of poetry written just for you by a computer. It's not such a wild idea given the recent development of AI-powered language models such as the GPT-3. Isn't that the name of the latest Tesla?
Yeah.
But the product I'm describing isn't new at all. Called Magical Poet, it was installed on an early Macintosh computers and deployed in retail settings nationwide all the way back in 1985.
Remember when?
Welcome to the future. Okay, I came across this gem, or the author.
I think you love you.
Yeah, let's back that all the way down. It's one of those pots that just spins around and around and around. There's no real start or stop, so I don't know when it's
like
done.
Your saw or your like iPod click wheel. I said we're making a collection here tonight.
Frictionless devices. They come in all sizes and shapes in this household. Well, the author of this came across this poetry gem of a fact in this year's November issue of Mac User Magazine. A small item right near the announcement that Apple was working on the ability to generate digitized speech. You see, pursuing 1980s and 1990s computer magazines from the Internet Archive is a hobby of this person's, and it rarely disappoints. Their tastes tend towards Mac User and Mac World, given their Apple-centric childhood, though he's also known to dip into some vintage Byte. Ooh, Byte magazine.
Yeah.
I love the wordiness of an old advertisement with whole paragraphs devoted to the details of their products. I love when the article describes concepts and ideas that we take for granted now, like the nature of uploading and downloading.
Yeah.
And I love the nostalgia these magazines evoke, that sense of wonder and possibility that computers brought to us when they first entered our lives. But there's much more to it than mere delight. I found that excavating old technology often points the way to something new. That's especially the case when you're digging, as I like to do, in that strata from an early age of personal computers. These old magazines in particular describe a sort of Cambrian explosion of diversity in hardware and software designs. Their pages show a spray of long-lost lineages of technology and strange precursor forms. But you may come across a standalone software thesaurus. That's not a dinosaur, by the way. We were talking Precambrian before. With a testimonial from William F. Buckley Jr., or a word search generator, or a magazine on floppy disks. And let's not forget the Mac table, a beechwood desk made in Denmark to fit the Macintosh and its various peripherals.
I'm looking at it right here.
This was a time when ideas were firmly on the explore side of the explore/exploit divide. In the 1980s and early 1990s, we tried out a huge number of new concepts, many of which look strange to us today. As these technological possibilities were winnowed down, we moved into the exploit phase, building out the stuff that worked the best. That's what happened for personal computers and for personal computer desks. But it's just as true in other realms of innovation. Just look at the early range of designs for flying contraptions, for example, or bicycles, or automobiles, or you pick your favorite thing here. Some species of technology go extinct for a good reason. The penny farthing with its huge front wheel seems vaguely ridiculous in retrospect, and also pretty darn dangerous. In a Darwinian struggle, it should die. But sometimes an innovation dies out, it dies out for some other lesser reason. One that's more function of the market at the time or other considerations than any overarching principle of quality. I don't think anyone misses the experimental steam-powered cars from the start of the automotive era. But inventors and tinkerers were also working on electric cars back then. Those only failed, as Vannevar Bush once noted, because batteries weren't good enough. In other words, it was a bad time for a good idea. Many other good ideas have gotten buried in the past and waiting to be rediscovered. History is an archaeological tell with layers of uncovered springs of inspiration. HyperCard, for example, was a 1987 software tool for the Mac that allowed non-programmers to build their own programs in a way that prefigured the current no-code Wow. Okay. You know, I forgot all about HyperCard.
Yeah.
But I remember there were some diehard fans to that. A neural network software package from 1988 has a family resemblance to the machine learning techniques that drive so much of today's technological advances. And let's not forget 1994's electronic napkin to help you brainstorm what has been reborn in today's so-called tools for thought. While true extinction might be quite rare in technology, Kevin Kelly argues that no technology ever truly goes extinct. Many early software and hardware concepts do vanish from the popular imagination and widespread use. There's plenty to learn from poking around in the archives. But technologies have an unfortunate tendency to overlook all of this. A few years ago, The New Yorker quoted the recent pardoned Anthony Lewandowski, a pioneer in self-driving cars, on his dogmatic disregard for everything that has come before. Lewandowski's perspective is by no means universal, but it is not uncommon either. As Ian Bogost told The Baffler, computing is one of the most ahistorical disciplines in the sciences. A computer scientist, Brett Victor, cleverly drove this problem with ahistorical thinking home in a talk where he pretended he was speaking in 1973. He demonstrated through example after example that there were wild and wonderful innovations decades ago from the direct manipulations of data in parallel computing paradigms, and yet modern technologies had ignored them. Victor recognized that history is full of missed opportunities. Okay, this article goes on a little bit more, but it is fun to look at some of these old magazines and go, wow. Yeah, or occasionally we will try to surface these stories and bring you things like remind you that electric cars were experimented with back in the 1910s, 20s.
Yeah, they've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, some form or another, yeah.
Time travel, I tell you, it's real.
Hey, by the way, in the same magazine with the desk that we were just talking about, the Apple desk, the Mac table.
Yes.
Right on the opposite page, it says there's an interview. It's several pages long with John Sculley, who was the CEO of Apple at one point. So he has a quote that says, DOS machines run 30 minutes per day, while the average Mac is used about 2.5 hours a day. Well, that's wildly inaccurate nowadays, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I use my DOS machine at least 45 minutes today. Yeah. You're crazy. Things have gotten really worse.
And here's some, this is pretty cool. There's a pricing from Programs Plus. There's from Blank Media to modems. So a smart modem 1200 was $299.
I remember when a 5 1/4 inch blank floppy would run you as much as $5.
Yeah, well, here was the BASF 3.5 inch floppy.
Ooh, the three
box of five is $8.
Oh, hey, that's a great price. And
those things
hold 720K. Or if you got the super high density ones, it was 1.44.
Well, here's some Sony ones for $1 each. So this is it. This is pretty cool. It brings back a lot of memories. Flipping through here, you know, how computer ads were obviously written towards the corporate. Now it's obviously not so much.
Then you get the ad for the really cheap floppies for like 25 cents a piece from Ventec.
Right. Ventec. Yeah. Some off brand you never heard about. Yeah.
Z Store. No.
Well, see, here's the 2-page ad with, it's just a price list. I remember seeing those, but I have never thought about that in a long time. You know, it's like you got software listing and then they've got education games, communication.
So yeah, now you barely see three words on an ad page. Like,
yeah. And I went, I actually, after reading this article, I did go pull up. There's a whole collection in Internet Archive called the Magazine Rack. And under there, it's not just computer magazines. There's tons of stuff. I did look at some Commodore magazines, some Byte magazines, Mac World. There's a bunch of stuff. It was really cool. Do what?
Omni.
Yeah. Those were those. I think those were on the Internet Archive. We have gone over Omni before. Yeah, I've done that. I've downloaded them before, yeah.
All right, it's time to give a special shout out and thanks to our patrons. So sit back, relax, put your lighters in the air or your cell phones on light mode because this song is for you. We should just sit back and listen. No, we need to thank these people like Alexis Duran and Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen and Abner Braverman. Thank you, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dan D. Man Coyer, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, and John Noble. Thank you, Jorge Schrauen. Some of these people have been around for years now. I think we're up on, 5 years since we started the Patreon program? And it has been a blessing. Yeah. Saved our bacon and keeps this show going. Christina and Kyle Nishioka and Leon and Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, and Chris Martinez, our latest Patreon. Thank you. Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. Thank you to all of you. You keep this show going. You pay for the bandwidth and the software upgrades. And so we don't have to, and our wives allow us to continue to do this without giving us the stink eye.
I know, right?
Aside from buying $7 saw blades that we already bought. That's a whole different story. That didn't come out of this budget, by the way. That was not part of this budget. That was.
I was going to say, wait a minute. Saw? Wait.
No, thank you. Not only do you get your show, your name with a special shout out on each episode. Emblazoned on our show. Yeah, like picture a gold plaque or it's embossed in the sidewalk or something if you wish. Your imagination. A brick. Yeah. That makes it sound like you're going to go swimming on the wrong end of the mafia. But,
concrete shoes.
Concrete galoshes. Now we're on the wrong show. That's a Star Trek reference.
Right.
We also have a special episode that we record right after this with a freeform topic of discussion. Sometimes it's topical. Sometimes we just let our brains wander and go where the winds blow. And you get that. You have a special RSS feed for that. So thank you very much to all of you for as little as $1 a show. Let me bring that back. Go there and Patreon. So if you're watching, you can join us at patreon.com/technoramapodcast. If you're listening, then I'll say it in audio. patreon.com/technoramapodcast. There we go. Thank you and good night.
Wait, we're not going away yet.
We're not going away. I just needed the band to go away.
Oh, okay.
patreon.com/technoramapodcast. patreon.com/technoramapodcast. patreon.com. No, let's go to pass me the remote. I've got a couple for you.
Oh, here you go.
Which way? This way?
Yeah, I don't know.
You gave me my own phone. How'd you get my phone?
Here, do this. Take one of those.
I'm sorry. Oh, I got a couple for you. I watched yesterday. Well, I like true crime shows. I do like true crime shows. And one that I picked up on Netflix, I forgot if it was in the top 10 or not, but it's called Night Stalker.
Yeah, it's a newer one, isn't it?
I think it's a newer one. They just came out with this recently. It is about the 1985 L.A. They called him the Night Stalker. They also called him the Walk-In Killer. There were a number of... It was a serial killer story, but it was very different because It wasn't the standard, oh, here's the calling card, here's the pattern. It made it very difficult for the police to track down the pattern. And they get into the politics of LA, how the LA Sheriff's Department wasn't communicating that well with the LAPD. And, oh, by the way, this crime happened over in another district. So it's not even the LAPD, it was somebody else. And then all of a sudden, crimes that appear similar start showing up in San Francisco going, what? So it was very interesting. Four parts. Each one was about an hour, I believe it was. I watched them all four right in a row. So I had a wonderful time. But that's just me. I like the true crime shows. You may want to spread it out over some time. But I figured, hey, I got a few hours this evening. I'm just going to dig in. And when I watch the first one, you know how they leave you on that hanging? They always leave you hanging on the last minute or so going, and then we discovered, you know, we got a name. Like, what was the name? So you got to go start watching.
Find out next week on.
So I enjoyed it. Night Stalker on Netflix. It's, you know, I'll give this one a solid 8.5. But, you know, that's my genre. I like that. They gave me a recommendation. 20? Out of 100? 10. Out 10? Of 10. No, out of 5. What do you think?
Yeah, 8.5 out of 5. Wow.
The other one I wanted to follow up because I did finish listening to Ready Player 2 a little over a week ago. I don't think I got it in last week's show. But Ready Player 2 by Ernest Cline. It was a follow-up sequel. We've mentioned it a couple of times before. Sequel to Ready Player 1, obviously. Mm-hmm. Read by Will Wheaton. I got the audiobook and listened to that. Donna has now started in on that. The I enjoyed it. You know, Kyle Nishioka, Mad Marv, he said that, you know, it didn't quite have that same like threat feeling, that the bad situation wasn't as bad as it was. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I would agree with that. I mean, I won't ruin it for you, but there was a lot more at stake that I thought. Yeah. Or the threat of it was. So they did bring back a number of characters. He also said that they didn't quite have that 80s nostalgia. And I get that. It was, they were jumping around from place to place within the Oasis and doing those nostalgic things. It seemed like every planet had a theme, which I think is what they had in the first one as well. I thought the whole battle with the Prince derivations was a little, that really didn't.
I like Prince, but it was dragging for me.
That part was dragging a little bit.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I thought was a little off was the timeline. I think they only had about 12 hours to accomplish this.
Yeah. I know. I was like, that's a lot to do. They're doing a lot of stuff in 12 hours.
Yeah. Well, even worse was, I think it was by the end of the 11th hour, they only had the first two or three shards and they got four more to go in the next hour.
Yeah.
So the timeline.
I think I remember trying to do that math going, we've only got four or three, like you said.
A little off on that part. It felt a little, it was a bit like one of those status bars loading where it's stuck on 95% for the 80% of the.
Right. Yes.
So, I mean, I enjoyed the story. Don't get me wrong. I would go back and listen to it again, probably in about another year. You know, give it some time to settle in and go listen to it. I want to listen to like one and two. The storyline picks up right where Ready Player One left off. But they do jump ahead a little bit in the first part because there's a new discovery made, and then they kind of bat that around and they go, okay, 3 months have passed and here's what happened. But the story does begin right after Ready Player One leaves off. Kind of like Incredibles.
That's true. Yeah, Incredibles 2 did take off right after that. So I'm still watching WandaVision. I think we're episode 4 now. I'm liking it. I'm still enjoying it, so it's still progressing, so I'm not going to really talk about it much.
All right.
There's a lot of places that'll break it down for you if you're interested in it, but you know, Easter eggs and all that kind of stuff.
Where do you find WandaVision? Is that Netflix also?
No, that's a Disney Plus exclusive.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, that's one of their, and right after this comes Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and then right after that wraps, I'm trying to remember what the next step, they're gonna have Marvel stuff all year long, sounds like, pretty much.
I discovered that I have a year subscription to Apple TV Plus because I bought the 4K Apple TV. I'm going, okay, now what do I want to watch on Apple TV? So if anybody has any thoughts of some decent content that they found on the Apple TV subscription program, please let us know. I would very much like to explore that. But I
think they kind of got slow because of COVID and everything, because they didn't have the big production machine rolling like Netflix and Amazon did.
Right.
So Amazon and Netflix have still had material to roll out. So I'm looking forward to the Lord of the Rings stuff coming out on Amazon. I think that's coming out this year. You know,
is it the Peter Jackson stuff or is it new stuff?
No, new stuff.
Really?
All new. And it's, okay. It's all, I think it's stories from the Silmarillion that they've kind of repurposed.
Now that's interesting because I have not read that yet. But the reference to it in Ready Player 2 was more like that was kind of like a compendium more than a storyline. It wasn't so much an adventure, but it was a lot of world setup. And it was, whereas The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings takes place in the Third Age, this is more of First Age stuff. So you're not going to see a lot of similarity.
That's right.
So, all right.
Yeah, you'll see a little bit, but not much. And the Silmarillion, actually, I think you mentioned in Ready Player 2 that how hard it was to get to read the Silmarillion. And I was like, oh my God, yes. I mean, I haven't read it. I've read some, but some of the characters have like, you know, two sentence long names. And, you know, I'm like, how am I supposed to remember that?
Like
you
Shakespeare.
Yeah, exactly. It is rough, but it's there. And yes, there's a lot of it's taken from that. And anyway, we'll see. It's supposed to come out, I thought, this year. So hopefully it still does.
Let's finish up then with the Geek Library. Go ahead. Finish this out with our last article story.
Okay. So from SF Gate, the title is My Long and Frustrating Battle Against My Internet Passwords. Let me big in the font there. I am so bad at remembering them that even Google doesn't trust me anymore. Wow. Due to my status as Forgot Your Password Power User, my last fail resulted in a 2 to 5 day lockout as they launched an investigation into whether it was really me. That subsequently logged me out of my Chrome vault, triggering a grueling week of guessing which of the three recycled passwords I used to buy my dog food.
Okay.
So like 66% of the 3,250 internet users surveyed, my password manager company, LastPass, I reused the same password for multiple accounts. Even though I'm in the 91% of those of those people who know that's dumb.
Yes.
I'm also in the 6.7% of people who would rather take the middle seat on a 14-hour flight than make a unique password for every menial online activity. And just like I regularly fly sandwich between strangers to have money to save money on plane tickets, I'm cheap to pay for a password manager service. I'm too cheap. I don't know why I'm having trouble reading this. Some are saved in my Google and others saved in Apple. That's a bad idea. Start mixing and matching password managers. But neither is saved me from my horrible memory. In my week of Google purgatory, I entered a password 50 times for everything from buying socks to canceling Wall Street Journal trial subscription. In a whopping 25 of those instances, I failed on my first try, remembering a simple string of letters, numbers, and useless symbols that would otherwise have been retired from the keyboards.
Garrett Sine, I'm looking at you.
Yes, that's right. Due to all the authenticating I do, I received nearly as many as two-factor texts as messages from my friends. AT&T politely dodged my inquiry into the percentage of two-factor texts sent compared to regular text messages, but this still seemed, like an outage amount of interruptions and also a reminder that I need to be more social. So it was a wake up call. I need professional help. So although I definitely need a psychiatrist, I settled for a psychologist instead. Richard Ivory, professor of psychology and neuroscience in UC Berkeley, who fielded 17 minutes of questions on how to better remember passwords before he had something more important to do. I guess he forgot he was on an email chain. So naturally, memorizing a secret combination of letters to buy dog food is a first world problem, but passwords are nothing new, nor is recycling them. People have been using the same sesame or same using Open Sesame since 1704, but our current dilemma can be traced to the mid-1960s and the very first computer password used to access MIT's compatible time-sharing system network. So there have been countless innovations since then, but let's just fast forward to data protection becoming a $11.97 billion industry in 2019. Within the U.S., Californians are particularly vulnerable to identity theft, really, and the third highest number of complaints in the country behind Georgia and Florida.
Well, you know who lives in Florida?
Huh?
You know who lives in Florida? A lot of the older segment.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking of a current resident we know that just moved there.
No, stop. So don't get political on me.
No. I was like, well, no, but somebody did figure out, remember his Twitter password twice. Remember about a year ago, sometime last year? So he had password problems too. Anyway, I'm not going to go through all this because he talks about the this whole Open Sesame thing with the professor. Now, I don't know about you, but I use Bitwarden for passwords.
I use KeePass.
KeePass is good. KeePass is good. I like it because it's open source. You know, and you can move it around. You just put the key database on Google Drive or something like that, and you can sync it.
Yeah, same here. I've got Donna's and mine are both housed on Google Drive, and she knows my master password, and I know her master password. Should anything ever happen, because holy Hannah, if you know your partner, spouse, whatever passes away, and you need access to that data, forget it. I mean, there's hundreds of passwords in there that I've used over the years, and albeit many are based on an algorithm that I know. So if I forget a password, I've got a good chance of getting in going, I don't remember the exact password, but I know the algorithm that I use to on 95% of them. The crazy ones are the ones that don't take that algorithm. It's like, no, you can't use that special character. I'm like, or you used that 6 years ago. You can't use it again ever. Like, dang.
No more than 8 characters. What?
I said, I forgot my password. No more than 8 characters. Yeah. 6 to 8 characters. Like the base of this algorithm is 10. Yeah. Come on.
Well, I used to use LastPass and I still got my database there, but I don't think I really need it anymore. But I went with Bitwarden. Bitwarden is open source also. But there's a company behind it, and I paid the $10 for the year, and which allows syncing. I got the same passwords on my phone and everything. It will do two-factor stuff, so all that's built in. Although you don't want to put all your two-factor stuff in there. That's probably not a good idea.
No, then it's not two-factor anymore.
No, it's right.
The whole point of two-factor is something you know and something you have.
Yeah. But there is one thing that I do really like about Bitwarden that LastPass would not do. Mm-hmm. Like at work, we have an SSO provider, right? Mm-hmm. We have Okta. So on a lot of our sites at work, they point to the same SSO, but the URL's different, you know, because at least a couple of instances, it's hard to explain. Anyway, you can put multiple URLs in for one password. So that same password would work on multiple sites, which is what I really like. So I was able to stack up a few of the addresses, URLs.
So you could get away with one password and just say, this is good for Apple, this is good for Facebook, this is good for Google, this is good for...
No, you could, but that's not what I was going for. Yes, you could. You could do that. Or you can even do regex to find if this is a address. So
nice.
It's really cool. I like it. And I would recommend that. KeepAss is also very good. I like it a lot as well. And they're both open source.
All right. Final, the thing we have for you in the Geek Library is a video that you just sort of sneakily heard creep through there.
You know what? I put this in there because I saw this before the show about an hour ago, mm-hmm. and I thought it was great. It's just a YouTube video. Go check it out. This guy 3D printed a Power Mac G3, you know, the not gumdrop one, but the Mac that's blue and white and has the handles on four corners. Mm-hmm. It looked like, well, when I saw the picture, I went, okay, he 3D printed this case. Yeah, but it's mini. It's like small. It's made for a Raspberry Pi.
Isn't it cute?
But what he did was he's got the Raspberry Pi booting on macOS 9.2.
So
it comes up, it works. I mean, it ran all the apps. It's using a disk image of 9.2. So yeah, it worked. He did run OS or Jaguar on it, and that one, it was too slow. You could see it was thinking hard to boot. But anyway, I thought this was kind of neat. And for Raspberry Pi, you know, in there, literally this thing cost less than $100 to make.
Well, another reason why I might get a 3D printer someday.
Oh man, I'm dying for a 3D printer.
It's going to be one of those rabbit holes that I go down and won't come out of for a year. That's kind of why I'm resisting.
Yeah, Donna's going to be walking through the house and step on pieces of plastic.
Well, I have no idea where I'm really going to put the thing at this point because the studio's in a big mess. The garage is.
You could have printed your own little brackets that you were trying to make or trying to find the other day.
Yeah, until you talked me into magnetic tape.
Oh well, did it work? Did it work?
I don't know. I don't have the fabric yet. So
okay,
that's coming. One of our marketing people said they were going to send me a ServiceNow tablecloth, like the kind we use at the Snugs. That was promised about a month ago, so I reminded her. She says, oh, I'll ship it out today. So we'll see.
You may have to get, if you ain't got the magnetic tape already, you may have to get some heavier magnets.
I did get the magnetic tape. It's already here.
Okay. And we'll give it a shot.
It's supposed to be the best one for heavier loads, but whether it works or not, you know, it'll be an experiment anyway, as a lot of things are in here. Okay, that takes us to the end of the show. We are over an hour. I apologize for the length of this one. We had a lot to talk about, and we just kind of went down some sidetracks. So our question for the week as we leave you here, what – we asked this before. I swear we did, because I remember people throwing these out all over the place, right and left. We're going to get a lot of responses to this, you know.
I know.
Okay, the question is,
it's called SEO, Chuck.
Uh-huh. What movie quotes do you live by? I would rather turn that into what family quotes do you live by?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do family quotes next time. What movie quotes do you live by? Send us your answers, your commas, your comments, your questions. You can reach us at, let me see if I can
get this. What catchphrases do you live by?
No, that's just way too broad.
I pity the
707-530-2428 is how you can reach us on a regular standard landline. Technorama@chuckchat.com is how you can reach us via email, or we will be posting this to social media next Saturday. So if you like that, go ahead and get a hold of us. Until then, we are going to record our Patreon topic and then talk to you again real soon. So let's play that closing theme. There it is. So many buttons to push and so little time. If you like that, appreciate it. Again, 707-530-2428 is how you get a hold of us. 707-530-CHAT. We should have a little jingle for that. Ooh, yeah. Hey, I just rhymed something by accident. Technorama@chuckchat.com, or you can find everything you need to find out about us. Just search Technorama Podcast on the internet. We're happy you did. And be sure to tell a friend about Technorama and... they'll go, why are you sending me this? It's like giving me a flat tire.
Right.
Am I the only one? Okay.
Yeah, you're the only one.
Thanks to everybody who sent us their feedback in the past or reached out to us, gave us those questions on the internet, on social media from last week. And thank you for all of our Patreon patrons one more time. Until next time, Craig, give them the binary high five.
All right. 101. Thanks everybody.